But this morning what I want to do is we want to study a little bit about Moses. And as you study about Moses, you turn to Exodus. And really we're going to concentrate on Exodus, the second chapter. But really, you have to understand the setting behind this, because when you look at Exodus, first chapter, it starts off verse 1 literally saying, "These are the names of the sons of Israel who went to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family." And if you end chapter 50 of Genesis, the children of Israel are really in a good place. But Joseph passed away, but his family, the children of Israel, are in the land of Goshen. And they are taking care of Pharaoh's herds, and basically they are isolated, but they're in a really good, fertile land. So good, in fact, that when you read here in Exodus 5, they have multiplied. And as you read here, as I think about this first chapter of Exodus, I'm reminded of the Star Wars movie when I first went to the very first Star Wars movie, and it had the scroll on the movie screen that says, "In a galaxy far, far away, a long, long time ago." And then it will explain to you the setting behind the rest of the story. Well, really, Exodus first chapter is on that lines. Because what it does is that he's talking to the children of Israel. And he then starts giving us the names of the children of Israel in verse 2 of Exodus first chapter. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and it goes on, Judah and Issachar, Zebulun, Benjamin, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, and it goes on. All those who were descendants of Jacob were 70 persons, for Joseph was in Egypt already. And it goes ahead, Joseph died then, and all the brothers of that generation. But the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied and grew exceedingly mighty, and the land is filled with them. And then that's where we pick up the reading we had a few minutes ago. There came a Pharaoh in Egypt that did not know Joseph or the good things he had done for the children of Israel. And basically they looked around and they saw these Israelites as threats to their society. There are various reasons for that. History says that perhaps not 400 years between Genesis and Exodus, but actually outsiders had come in and had actually overthrown the government of Egypt one time. And basically they were afraid that would happen again, because you had these people that are totally different than the Egyptians. And the Israelites were staying isolated, and they were not melding into the culture, and therefore they saw them and they said, "We're not doing something," because they're multiplying and having all these babies. And basically Pharaoh decided what we're going to do is, first of all, we're going to make them slave labor. They're going to be building our cities. They're going to be making our bricks for us. And then finally, he had decided basically that we're going to start killing these children off. So you look down at verse 15. "Then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of one was Sapphira and the other was Pua. And we said, 'What do you, when you do the duties of midwife of the Hebrew women and see them on their birth stools, if it is a son, then shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live.'" And of course, then it goes on to explain the midwives feared God, and therefore they basically did what they could to save the children, male children alive, verse 17. And as you start here then, that's where we kind of pick up here, but Moses is then introduced to us in chapter 2. And of course, as we read through the Bible, if I would say Moses, everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. There's only one Moses right in the Bible. And we realize he's a central figure here in the book of Exodus, but also he wrote these first five books of the Old Testament. And children of Israel looked up to him in so many ways. He is the great lawgiver, how they would think of him also. And so you look here, though, the Exodus second chapter starts off by saying, here's this Moses' humble beginnings then. And as you look in verse 1, it said, "A man of the house of Levi went and took a wife, a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she took an ark of bulrushes for him, dabbed it with asphalt and pitch, put the child in it, and laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. And his sister was standing afar off, or stood afar off, and to know what would be done to him. Then a daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river. And her maidens walked along the riverside, and when she saw the ark among the reeds, she saw, sent her maid to get it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. So she had compassion on him and said, this one of the Hebrew children. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse a child for you? And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go. So the maiden went and saw the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this child away and nurse him for me, that I will give you your wages. So the woman took the child and nursed him. And the child grew. And she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and she became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, because I drew him out of the water. And as you read this account here, there's a number of things that kind of stands out. And when we think about humble beginnings, we have to think about maybe like Abraham Lincoln that, you know, grew up in a log cabin, or you maybe think about other folks that grew up in really very poor. And what Moses here grew up with, humble beginnings really doesn't seem to really describe adequately really what Moses was being grown into. And then first of all, the facts is, one is the father and mother. Now, really, we don't read here their names in the second chapter of Exodus, but instead in the Exodus 6 chapter. And verse 20 said, now Abraham took for himself Jochebed, his father's sister, as wife, and she bore him Aaron and Moses. And the years of the life of Abraham, 137. Now, really, not a whole lot more given to us, except we do have these two names. And as you look at this here, we find, again, that they are the Hebrews. And, of course, we've been, I can also say, well, we know that he was born in a very hostile environment. And that is, we know that he had one brother Aaron and one brother Miriam, also given to us in other passages or in these passages, but also in a very hostile environment. As I said, when you read there in Exodus, the first chapter, now we often concern about maybe the world we're bringing our children into. I know my parents did when they were having us, the Cold War was going on, and not only that, but also all the racial tensions in our country, and not only that, but also we just come out of poverty of the Great Depression. And when we had our children, again, we had the various things going on in our society that you scratch your head and say, what kind of world are our children facing? And today when parents have their children, I'm sure they look around and think about what kind of world are their children facing. Well, you know, nobody, I think, really faces exactly what these folks here are facing. I mean, you talk about a hostile environment. Literally, the law was go out there and kill these children. It's really what they're born into. In Acts 17 chapter, where Stephen's lesson there at Jerusalem, he gives really kind of a deep, rich digest version of the history of Israel. And talking about this, in Acts 7, verse 18, he said, till another king arose who did not know Joseph, this man dealt treacherously with our people and oppressed our forefathers, made them expose their base so they may not live. Just think about that. As far as a concrete law, for everybody of a certain part of the society says, if you have a male child, your child is going to die. That's what they wanted to happen. And that again was the environment he's been brought up to. And then only that, but also, even if he lived, he'd been born into a slavery. And just as Aaron and just Mary, just as Abraham and Jochebed, just as their parents before them had been born into slavery, your child is going to work all their lives for Pharaoh, making his city, making bricks, doing whatever he wanted you to do. You were going to be a slave. And then not only that, but also you think about this here, that he was then hid by his mother. And the pastor hid by his mother for 3 months. Again, you have to look over in Acts 7, verse 20 to kind of get that information. It's at this time Moses was born and was well pleased unto God, and brought by his father's house for 3 months. How in the world you can hide a baby for 3 months? That had to be a major task. They're trying to keep that away from all Pharaoh's people, the taskmasters, or maybe from other Hebrews themselves, just trying to hide your child because you didn't know who was going to turn you in. But for 3 months, they were keeping this child. And just imagine that, for 3 months of seeing that baby as it's growing, as it started to mature, and maybe as it started crying. And then at that point, Now we find another fact to this as mom didn't take me. And again, just kind of imagine yourself in her position. Now you're taking your child and you make this basket and you make pitch, you put pitch on it so as to try to keep it waterproof and make sure it wouldn't just sink. And she takes this child, 3 months old, and puts it on the Nile River. That wouldn't be the same, by the way, as putting, let's say, on Green River or on the Ohio River. The Nile River was a river that had a lot of crocodiles. And it's possible that just one of those crocodiles would come and destroy that and eat that child right then. Not only that, but also, what would happen if it started taking on water? Or maybe this 3-month-old child would actually start somehow rocking a little bit. Because think of all these water situations that the child would have easily died. Put yourself in the position of the mother. Put your child out there not knowing what's going to happen. You just know you're putting him on the river and he's going to float away. All these facts in my mind stands out about this passage. And then also we have, though, of course, it's found by Pharaoh's daughter. And that's one of those things that if Hollywood scriptwriter, you know, there are times we read movies or we watch a movie, and as we watch a movie, we say, how'd that work out? I mean, that's just too good. That's just too much of a luck of coincidence happening there. We would, talk about how really that just doesn't make sense. Well, this one of those passages in the Bible we read about that somebody said, really? You mean all this worked out just right? First of all, Pharaoh's daughter is the one that discovers him. And not only that, but also said that she had compassion on him. I don't know if she had compassion on any other Hebrews. We don't read about any other Hebrews being brought to Pharaoh's house. It had been very easy for her to look at, and she recognized this one Hebrew children. It had been very easy for her to recognize this child being Hebrew and simply saying, you know, put him in the water. He's going to die anyway. Just go ahead and let him drown there. But not only that, but also it said that she decided to break her father's law. But she's the one deciding. Now, you know, this may have been different because she's part of Pharaoh's household. And if Abraham and Jacob had been caught breaking Pharaoh's law, it may have been worse for them. I don't doubt that. But still, she's breaking her own father's law in order to do what she does. And then she goes, Miriam, sister of Moses, is watching. And she sees this, and she comes and actually steps forward. Again, it'd be easy for her simply to say, okay, and just kind of not take part of anything else, just kind of sit back there and say, let's just see how this kind of works out, folks. That was what she did. Instead, what she does is she actually volunteers. I'll tell you what, I'll find you a Hebrew woman that can nurse this child for you. And so again, you might read about this, so to say, okay, I see where we're going with this. And sure enough, that what she does is that Jochebed actually is, you know, hired to nurse her own child. And all these facts are just interesting to me as you read about this. And the final thing here in these first 10 verses is that we find that Moses, instead of being raised as a slave, instead of making bricks and making cities for Pharaoh, that he's reared as part of Pharaoh's household, it says. I don't know how often that happened. Probably not happened any time before, any time after, as far as we know. We don't read about any case like this. These are the Hebrews that Pharaoh is afraid of coming and taking over his nation. And now he has actually one of their children in his own household. And as he does that then, we kind of have those first 10 verses as far as just facts given to us. And I think there's some important points to make here from these facts. And one is that in Mishnah, that Moses was a beautiful child. And again, when I read that, I think, how many times do we ever look at a child and say, boy, I tell you what, that's one of the most ugliest children I've ever seen. Now, we don't do that. I mean, you look at a child, I've always said that if you hold a child, you know, if you have a bad day, pick up a child and hold it, and that's going to make your day a whole lot better. However, there's something honestly extraordinary about Moses that he was talked about being a beautiful child. And we're going to notice that in a few minutes later on. But not only that, but also his parents decided. They made a choice to disobey Pharaoh. They had a choice to make here. When they had this male child, they said, okay, we can obey Pharaoh or we can disobey him. Now, as a parent, we would say that's a no-brainer. But they made that decision to disobey Pharaoh and risk whatever may happen to them. Knowing that, but also, we can see God's divine providence in this. There really wasn't anything miraculous involved here. Now, I know sometimes the word miracle gets thrown around a lot today. And a lot of times it means extraordinary events. But miracle, literally by definition, is an event that transgressed the very laws of nature. There really wasn't anything that transgressed laws of nature here. Moses was born. That's the law of nature. His mother, he grows up for 3 months. That's the law of nature. And she puts it in a basket that is made so it's not hold up, you know, it's to spill water to keep the child dry. Well, that's the law of nature. Pharaoh's daughter finds him, extraordinary event, but still law of nature. She suddenly finds him. But what we're saying with this here is that we can see the hand of God in all of this. That God's working through divine providence, doing his will on this account. And then also say that God's will pleases Moses. And I find that, you know, interesting because it's not spoken about Moses as the man, but instead it talks about him as the child. In Acts 7, verse 20. At this time Moses was born and was well pleased to God. He was brought in his father's house for 3 months. Now, as you read that third thing, okay, now how can you be well pleased with God? Perhaps again, realize what Moses will be later on. Much like if you turn Bibles, and I kind of throw in an extra passage here, but throw your Bible to Jeremiah 1 verse 5. In Jeremiah 1 verse 5, is God is calling this man to be his prophet. It said, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you. I ordained you as a prophet to the nations. That God knew what Jeremiah would become. And much like it's the case here in Moses, God knew what Moses would be capable of. God was well-pleasing with Moses, the passage says to us. So that's kind of the Moses of the early years. And then as you look here back to Exodus, the second chapter, we have here a time break, obviously. In fact, probably about, you know, from the general idea of being taken into Pharaoh's household and growing up there to the verse 11, roughly 40 years. 40 years later. And so in this passage here, in 2nd chapter, verse 11, says, now it came to pass in those days when Moses groaned that he went after his brethren and looked at their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that way, and when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And went out the second day, behold, two Hebrew men were fighting. He said to the one who did the wrong, why are you striking your companion? Then he said, who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? So Moses feared and said, surely this thing is done. When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. And that kind of starts a whole new chapter, a whole new event in Moses' life. But you read that passage there, again, kind of going back to Acts 7 chapter, because this gives a little more information. In Acts 7 verse 21, is that when they set out, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and brought him up as her own son. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, the mighty in words and deeds. Now when he was 40 years old, it came to his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer, he defended and avenged him who was present and struck down the Egyptian. For he supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand, but they did not understand. And so in that account there, we find out a number of things about Moses. One is, as you read through this here in verse 26, and say the next day, he appeared to two of them as they're fighting, trying to reconcile them, saying, men, you are brothers, why do you wrong me and one another? But he did his neighbor wrong, saying, who made you a judge? Who wanted to kill? And so that's all just read here. Then the same Moses fled and became a dweller in the land of Midian where he had two sons. And so he kind of put those things together, two passages together, and he recognized the fact that a number of things about Moses. One is that this was a man of bold. I mean, he was a confident, bold person at this point here, that he had been brought in the ways of Pharaoh, and he decides, as the passage says, to visit his brethren in Acts 7 chapter. Now, visit can have a lot of different connotations, right? In our society today, when I say, well, I'm going to go visit somebody, that can mean anything from coming by and saying hi to you to maybe staying a few hours or maybe staying a couple of days. And the Bible, we find the visit often refer to the idea of the relief, the affliction of somebody else. It means to help. And in James 1, verse 27, a pure and undefiled religion for God is a visit to orphans and widows. And there it means to relieve their affliction. And so when you think about this idea of visit his brethren, and in fact, as you look in, kind of going back to our Exodus 20, verse 11, it said to, he went out to his brethren, looked at the burdens. He saw how hard things was for them. We look here in Acts, the 7th chapter, verse 23. And it came to his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And so he's going out there with the idea of doing something, and he goes out and kills an Egyptian slave master. And then only that, but also a day later, when he sees his own Hebrew brethren fighting, he steps in the middle of it. And that is, he kind of rebukes them of why are you doing this? And so, this is a bold person. Kind of getting himself involved in everything going on. And not only that, but also, later on, if you go down here in Exodus 2nd chapter, in verse 17, you find that in Midian, he comes across these women who are shepherdesses. They were the daughters of a Midian priest, it says. And basically, they're being oppressed or being taken advantage of by the other men around, the other shepherds around them are men. And he comes to their defense. And that's Jethro's daughters. And so he's getting involved in all these things. He's being pretty bold in his life. And not only that, but also he spoke out of things that are not right. You know, he's one that's saying, this is not right what you're doing to one another. This is not right how you're being treated. All right, so he spoke out when things were not going right. And then not only that, but also this same kind of boldness, by the way, is talked about with the apostles. When you look at it and find that we're in Acts 4, verse 18, and when they have been arrested, and they said, they called them, commanded them not to speak at all, nor teach in the name of Jesus. But Peter and John answered and said to them, whether it's right inside of God to listen to you more than God, you judge. For we cannot but speak the things we have seen and heard. And then going down to verse 29, and their prayer to God was, now Lord, look on their threats and grant your servants that with all boldness they may speak your word. We want to be bold. It's what he's saying, what they're saying to God. Help us be bold and proclaim your word. And so we find that with Moses. He was a bold person. And not only that, but also we see his strength and weakness. Can I be fair about this? As far as Moses, the decision maker. And that what I mean by that is Moses had tasted the good life. We read earlier about him being brought up in Pharaoh's household. Which meant he would have had the best food. He would have had the best clothes. He would have had the best attention that possible that life could get. He probably had servants that would have been helping him. He received education. It talked about he was learning all the ways of the Egyptians. And so he would have experienced all that 40 years of age. And now he had to make a decision. Do I serve God and lose everything? Do I side with the Hebrews and lose everything or risk losing everything? Or do I stay where it's at, where I'm at, and have the luxuries of life? Now, of course, what we know is Moses chose to serve God. In fact, Hebrews 11, verse 24 said, by faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction of the people of God than enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. And again, you kind of underline that idea. When you think about a case like King Tut, and they show all the extravagance of his burial, all the gold and all, you know, just what they put inside the tomb. Imagine what he could experience on a day-by-day basis. The same thing here about the king of Pharaoh and the family. They wouldn't have had all the things that life could offer. But he goes to esteem the approach of Christ greater riches than the treasure in Egypt for looked to reward. He made a choice, much like today. We choose whether or not we're going to serve God. We, in some ways, make this choice on a daily basis. Sometimes, once we make that big choice, then it all becomes easier later on. But we choose who we're going to serve in our life. And many passages, in fact, instructs us to make our choice. Choose who you're going to serve. Over in James 4, verse 4. Adulterers, adulteresses, do you not know that friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. When it says friendship here, it doesn't mean in our normal way of using a day, but what it means is to align ourselves, either with God or the world. Much like when Pilate had Jesus before him, and the Jews were saying, if you let this man go, you're not a friend of Caesar. You're not aligning yourself with Caesar if you let this Jesus go. Well, here's the idea again. Who are you going to align yourself with? It says either God or the world. You can't have both ways. Jesus, in Matthew 6, verse 24, said, no one can serve two masters, for either they'll hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. All the way through this, choose who you're going to serve. Now, you know, some will refuse to make that choice. And what they're doing by default is really making a choice. They're choosing to not serve God. Others may choose to serve God, but then don't actually follow through with that choice. They don't actually do what they're chosen to do. And the last thing among Moses, and I said the decision making was Moses' strong point, but also his weakness. And sometimes the quality of somebody can also be their detriment. My sister growing up. My sister is a very vocal, outgoing person. And there are times that my sister would literally tell herself to our parents. She would just tell them everything she done wrong. And at times I thought, why don't you just be quiet? They didn't know about that. You didn't have to tell them that. But she would tell them. Well, Moses is kind of the same way, and that is his decision making was good. However, sometimes it was the wrong choices. And there are times that Moses had zeal, but the wrong kind of zeal. And what I mean by that is that his zeal is not according to knowledge. Romans 10, verse 2. And Paul taught just brethren that they had a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. Therefore, they were seeking to establish their own righteousness. And if you think about what I'm referring to here of Moses, is that Moses goes out there, and Moses basically kills a Hebrew slave, an Egyptian slave master. They can argue as far as was that right or not. You know, as you look at that, he kills somebody. And not only that, but also as you look at this here, and again, he may have been thinking, I'm doing the right thing in killing this man, but not only that, but also by killing him, he actually puts himself in life's danger to the point of having to run away. And for 40 years, he's out in the wilderness. Now again, perhaps reading some things into this, and you may disagree with me on this, but I'm like, what would happen if Moses hadn't done that? And you would say, well, God knew he was going to do that, and therefore God used circumstance, and I understand that. But he's just thinking about that. Moses is in exile 40 years. For 40 years, he's had to stay out there. And now in those 40 years, he will have lost his position. He's no longer part of Pharaoh's household. He lost his influence. Nobody else he could talk to in Pharaoh's household, go listen to him from now on. And not only that, but he could have lost his life during those 40 years. He lost everything he had in Egypt. To the point that even his own brethren, the Hebrews, when he came back, they weren't really that willing to listen to him, at least in the beginning. And so look at this here and just think about the fact that he thought that basically what the pastor said, that he thought that they would understand that God was going to use them to save the children of Israel. Well, you know, the thing is that he really didn't understand himself exactly how God was going to use him. He wasn't as a rebellious person like this. He wasn't going to lead a military rebellion against Egypt. But instead he's going to do what God said to do. And so he thought that there's great effort. All the way through Moses' life, there's great effort. Sometimes it was wrong. There are a few times to look at it, so Moses just did the wrong thing in that case. And so you look here, it's kind of summing you up here. In Moses, we see the hardships. We see the tough situation born into. We see his trials, and sometimes we see his defeats also. But we also see what God can do with somebody that has faith. God did not choose perfect people to serve him. God chose people that believed in him. God used people that had faith, perfect and imperfect both. And the same thing about us. So we have our trials, we have our problems, we have sometimes our defeats. But again, faith overcomes those things. We have to have that kind of faith. And we too can walk with God if we have the kind of faith God said to have. So that's the early part of Moses' life. As you have a song selected now, and then Well, later on, let's deal with Moses as a lawgiver, but I appreciate your kind attention this morning. We have a song that's selected, 285. We've encouraged anyone here this morning who's not a Christian, has not confessed Jesus Christ, Son of God, been baptized for remission of sins to do so. Also, a way for us to pray for one another if those prayers are necessary and needed on your part. We're here to aid each other, and that's our attempt to go to heaven. And so, let you ask and let you stand as we sing.